Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, August 22nd edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour or so. We're going over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me. What used to be our Tuesday meeting show, we still have one of our guests from that Tuesday meeting show. That is Mr. Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. We'll chat with him here early in the show about some of his preseason futures positions, how the odds makers seem to make adjustments to what's going on with those preseason bets. Then we'll take a look at the ACC and the four games that are coming up here on Saturday that we also discussed yesterday with Kyle Hunter. Coming up in the second half of today's show, we'll chat with Alex Nicholas from the SB Nation blog Minor Rush. That is the home of the UTEP Miners. We're going to chat Conference USA. So we like to talk about conference specialization here on this show, talk about looking for the value in those group of five leagues. So we'll do a deep dive here into Conference USA. One of those teams playing on Saturday, that is Rice, but we'll cover the rest of the conference there with Alex as well. A few things before I bring on today's first guest. First thing I want to mention, those contests that we have going on over at bangthebook.com. Daily streaker contest, monthly pick of the day, cash prizes for top monthly win percentage, top ROI, top number of units won. Those are free contests. You just sign up over there, give us your email address. We'll shoot you a newsletter every now and then. But that'll allow you to get into those contests and win some cash prizes. So good opportunities there, especially, like I said, if you're just starting out as a bettor, if you're not confident enough to have a whole lot of skin in the game or deposit at a sports book, you can get your feet wet a little bit, do these contests and see how that works out for you. Also, I posted the second edition of my power ratings on Saturday. So if you haven't gotten a chance to check those out, please do. I will be updating those throughout the season here each week at bangthebook.com. We're also adding some new writers. That call that I made for writers last week, we got some very, very interesting submissions, so we'll be adding those as we go throughout the football season. Should have one of those new writers posted today or tomorrow, and then a couple others shortly thereafter. So we got some good stuff, some really in-depth, detailed, next-level analysis coming your way over at bangthebook.com, and we're very, very excited about that. One final note, that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook. If you head on over to DSI, use the promo code BTB and the number 25. You'll get a $25 free bet simply for signing up. Then if you decide to deposit, they'll give you a 100% deposit match bonus. And then if you decide to add funds to the live casino, you get a 100% deposit match bonus for that as well. So basically, a 200% bonus for DSI with that $25 free bet to check things out. So again, you want to have as many outs as possible here during the football season. If DSI isn't part of your current rotation, go over there, use that BTB25 promo code, and make it part of your regular rotation. So that, we'll go ahead and bring on today's first guest. That is the great Brian Leonard from WagerTalk.com. Brian, how's it going today, bud?
It's going great, and I know you just mentioned DSI, and I've had an account with DSI in the past, and as you mentioned, I believe it was on one of the shows I was listening to this week, they've gone independent. They used to be affiliated with the Chris Books, I believe. And so that extra out that you can get off of that is a great bargain. And living in Las Vegas, and although there's concerns about the offshore industry and all when you're living in Las Vegas, you want something that you're not going to find here. And I'm always running around the state trying to find individuals who put up their own lines, take their own opinions on these. Jerry's Nugget right here in Las Vegas, Treasure Island. When you can get an offshore that does that, it's a tremendous advantage.
No, absolutely. And that is something we talked about a little bit over the summer in terms of, you know, all the operators that are out there in Vegas, but there aren't a whole lot of individual ones like you mentioned. So, you know, when you do get one of those, it's kind of like finding a diamond in the rough, and it gives you the opportunity to get some lines, get some prices that aren't available in other places. And speaking of lines and prices that aren't available in other places, I want to talk about your preseason futures positions here for college football. I know you mentioned last week that you've got some Oregon stuff. You don't do a whole lot with win totals. We'll touch on Oregon in a minute. Games of the year lines, you know, these are numbers that are no longer available. So good to talk about these, good to keep them in the back of your mind. But there is a method to the madness. There is something I want to ask you about here that will have relevance for the lines that will be coming out, you know, for future weeks here during the college football season. But do you remember offhand what some of those, you know, conference or win total futures you have are?
Well, I know for week one, one of them was canceled because they moved the date of the game. And unfortunately, it cost me 4 points. That was a Central Florida game. They moved the location, or they moved the date of the game. So I lost four. I had the line beat by 4 points, and I had to turn my ticket in because they don't honor it if it's not played on that date. I also played week one, San Jose State plus the 25. Right now it's at 20.5, 21. The reason being for that is you've got a South Florida team who lost their head coach and was traveling all the way to the West Coast. They rarely travel out of that general area down the SEC country and in the Sun Belt country. They rarely travel outside of that, and they're going all the way to the West Coast to play in California. I thought that was a terrible situation for them, and at this point I'm up 4 points on what the current line is. And then what I do for these games is I take my bets, take a picture of them, put them in a safe deposit box, and they're gone. And that's one of the things that I do. And as the week comes on, I know I have a little bet on them, but I don't let that affect. It's like two separate bets. If I liked them at 25 and the line's at 21 now, if I still like the 21, I'm still going to bet it again. I'm not going to let the better bet sit and say, well, I've already got a 25. If I still find value at 21, I'm still going to bet it.
We'll talk a little bit more about those Saturday games, and obviously you let the cat out of the bag a little bit there with that South Florida and San Jose State game. You mentioned last week that you had some Oregon futures. We talked about those teams that are blue blood, name brand types of programs, and it can be really challenging to power rate them. You know, a team like Notre Dame was 4-8 last year. They're in the top 25 in my power ratings. Oregon had a rough year. I think they were 4-8 as well. They're 19th in my power ratings. So you have to respect that level of talent. And it certainly seems like you did that with Oregon. So what are some of those futures that you have out there with Oregon, and do you think that they're still playable?
Yeah, basically, I went down any Oregon that I thought there was value on, and there was a lot of them coming out of the gate. People just assume when a school has a bad year, it's going to continue on. But when you draw like Oregon does, and Oregon's got so much money, because of the Nike founder over there, everybody loves their uniforms. It's just one of those things. If you're a kid, Oregon is one of the places you want to go play. But the main reason I wanted to play Oregon in these games is I don't think they gave the coaching change much of an advantage. The head coach they've had for the last few years, has really not been very good. He inherited a lot of great players from the coaching regime before that, and he really didn't get anything out of them. And once those players started to leave and he was getting doing his own recruiting, that's when you saw Oregon struggle. Now they've got a decent coach over there. They've got quality defensive coordinators. This is a team that I think has a lot of value, not only from the coaching position, but also from the recruiting. You got better recruiting people over there now. So I thought that, I had a conversation with Chris Andrews about this, and he was way down on Oregon. Now, of course, he's way up on Penn State. And that line has come down. So you're getting basically, when you're betting these game of the years, you're getting your opinion against that single lines maker. You're never going to get that the rest of the season. The rest of the season, you'll be betting up against millions of other bettors that have information also. So that's one of the things we like to get in early, get your plays in early. And in retrospect, I didn't get enough of them in because I saw some lines that were 4 and 5 points off, and I didn't want to tie up my money for that long. Turns out I was right on those, and the lines have come back down to where I thought they were going to be. And now I'm kicking myself for not betting as many.
So what did you wind up with Oregon? Did you play – what was the season win total? Was it 7.5 at the time? Is it the 8 that's out there in the market now? Do you recall what it was?
I don't remember what it was because I don't do a lot with season wins. The reason being it's only a 12-game season, and there's a lot of things – just one or two games where you just have something happen in a game where you get that win. For example, I'll talk a little bit about Wake Forest because we're going to speak about that conference a little bit later. When they played teams that were not in the top 50 last year, they were 6-2 straight up, but yet they only outscored them by 1 point a game. So what do you take a look at? Well, I would take a look more at the scoring of the game. They were very lucky. They should have been 4-4, maybe 5-3 at the best. and they get 6-2 because of that. So when you're only playing 12 games, it's tough for me to trust it, because you're going to get one or two games when the team is just outplayed and they win, or if they outplay them slightly and they lose. So I would rather – I do a lot more with NBA and especially Major League Baseball. You got 162 games in the baseball season. Those things are going to even out at the end. So I don't play a lot of futures in college football. I didn't play any at all. In the NFL, the Browns, I've got the Browns over. I believe it was 5 at the time. But most of the things I just don't play, because there's just small sample sizes of 12 and 16. 16, not quite as bad, but 12 is just too much for me to put into a chance where I'd rather play an 82 in the NBA and a 162 in Major League Baseball.
So basically, Brian, what you do is instead of getting invested in the season win total market, like somebody like Sports Cheetah, for example, who's got 41 season win total bets out there, and the teams that you like, as opposed to taking positions on their win totals, you take positions on the games of the year lines or the look ahead lines that are out there.
That's exactly right. And if I see a game that I got a West Virginia play down at the Golden Nugget. They were playing Baylor, and I thought the line was too high. I thought they were giving Baylor too much credit. West Virginia at the time, there wasn't a lot of buzz about them. Now there's a little bit more. So I think by the time that game goes off, I'll have a lot better line than what the current line is. And, of course, once you get to that game, you're just going to handicap it the way you normally would. So, like I said, I just take pictures of these, put them in a safe deposit box. They're out of my way. And, you know, if I want to look and say, okay, what did I have? I can always go back and look at the pictures and say, okay, that was a winner. I just don't let you. I think you mentioned about this the other day on one of your shows, that it's not the line you could have got. If a game comes out, like I said, I had 25 on San Jose. It's not that now I says, well, I can't get 25. I'm not going to play it. No, you get the best bets you can at that time, and then now you reevaluate it and you say, you know, 21 may still be a good number. So a lot of people they say, well, I got that already. I don't want to play it again. But if you've got more information as the season goes on, you're able to get a better judgment of that game. So when I bet that thing early on, there was very little information. I basically was just going off of returning starters, coaching changes, scheme changes, and travel situations. And once you get to the regular season, then you've got more information. You can go off your stats or whatever. And a game like the Oregon game, by that time, there's plenty of stats. So if it still shows that I should be playing Oregon at that current number, I'll play it again.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you is, you know, you take some of these positions, you set yourself up to get some closing line value, and you've had some times where you've had 15, 18, 20 points of line value off those games of the year lines, you know, once we actually get to game week. So you've done a very, very good job of that. You've done a very good job of picking off bad numbers there. So the question then becomes, you've got an investment out there on some of these teams. So, you know, if you like a team, like you obviously like Oregon, is that a team that you're going to look to back early in the season, look to double down, so to speak? Or are you sort of thinking, okay, you know, I've got my Oregon plays in week 7 and week 9 and week 11. You know, I'm good with that. I don't have to dive right in on this team right now.
Well, like I said, you just treat it all as an individual bet. I have those bets on Oregon. Those are gone. Those are put away. Now I handicap every game as it goes on at that situation. And if I still find value in Oregon, I'll still bet Oregon. If I find that I don't like Oregon anymore and my power ratings say I should be against Oregon, I will be against Oregon. So there's times at the end of the year, there was one time I was 24 points off on, I believe it was a Florida State BYU game. The BYU quarterback was injured early on. And I had this great line on Florida State -1. And I says, well, you know, this is probably one of those things where I'm going to try to get a middle on. And Florida State ends up winning that game by 2, and I was probably the only person in the world that got a win on Florida State. So it's just one of those things that the line opened at 1 and then it closed at like 24 or something. So you're going to have those cases come up, but you have to treat it individually. Everything you want to do is an individual bet. If you bet on a team for season wins, it's not like you don't want to bet on them the rest of the year. You take everything game by game. if it's divisional or things like that. I've got some baseball, you know, I've got some baseball futures that I've played that some big winners, some big losers at this point. That doesn't mean I'm going to avoid that team or play on that team to try to get that money back or to advance on more of how the money I have in that team. You're going to want to play everything on an individual basis, and the information you get changes every week, every day, and you just have to handicap it just like you would any other team.
So like you said, one of the things that you really like about the games of the year lines, and one of the things that people like Sports Cheetah and Brad like about season win totals, is that it's you against the odds maker. It's not you against everybody else like it is throughout the week, where you're trying to get in there, get the best line, get it before it moves, figure out where the line's going. You're playing against other sharp bettors. You're playing against the public. You're playing against odds makers, bookmakers. There's a lot more moving parts during the season. So my question for you is, if you could put yourself kind of in the position of an odds maker here a little bit, when you see a season win total move up a full win, or you see something like a Northwestern where I think they went from 6.5 with the over at plus money to 7 with the over at juiced, you know, when you see moves like that as an odds maker, do you think that they're adjusting their power ratings along with the action that's going on? Or is it a spot where, you know, maybe they don't adjust enough and could get burned on that team again at the start of the year?
I think it all depends on who the odds maker are. I know over at the South Point, they've got two or three guys that, you know, say, what do you make this? One guy will say 6, one guy will say 6.5, one guy will say 7. They'll say, okay, well, let's make it 6.5. And if the line moves, you know, from 6.5 up to 7, I don't know if they would make that much of a difference. But you have to listen to your betting public. And the guys that are betting those games of the year, putting their money up 2, 3 months, 4 months in advance, those are guys who are willing to take that chance. So you have to treat that with respect. So there's, when you put out the lines, and I give them all the credit in the world, the South Point did it this year. The Golden Nugget has done it in the past where they were first out. Give them all the credit in the world. You're really putting a lot of pressure on yourself that you know more than the public does. And you just got to learn from that. So I think it all depends on what it is. It depends, you know, a lot of times they book the faces. And, you know, they obviously have the player's cards. You go in, a lot of places won't let you bet a maximum bet unless you've got a player card because they want to know who's betting it. So if, you know, obviously when you're betting the faces, I don't know if anybody's ever seen a picture of Cheetah. He's a very, you see him and you remember what he looks like. He's got that big long beard and he looks like a human lion. It's just the way that beard is. He got a mane. So when he goes in, people know what he looks like. I go in, I'm a fat guy. They know who I look like. So a lot of the sports book directors will say, yeah, we bet the faces. And like if Cheetah goes in, and let's say he just bets $100 on a game, and then some guy from the pit area comes in and bets $1,000 on a game that they don't know and they don't know anything about him, even though the money is 10 times more on the guy that's coming in from the pit area, they will probably take the Cheetah's bet more seriously because of that, because they know he does this for a living and he's a winner. He's a sharp guy. He gets the best of the number on just about everything he bets, the same with just about everybody else you've got on the show, and they take that more seriously. In fact, I used to do – Bodog was out a long time ago, and I did a lot of things with Bodog, and I was talking to the management of Bodog, and I said, how do you work these things? And they said, we've got a guy who only bets $25 a game, but he bets a lot of games every week, and he's good. He said, we're just lucky this guy doesn't have a bigger bankroll because he's such a good handicapper, and we move more on his $25 bet than some other guys who are betting $3,000 because they've tracked him and they rated him as an A player or whatever. And, you know, Steve Fezzik, who's out in Las Vegas, he used to work for Pinnacle, and he tells me, he says, we used to rate guys. This guy's an A player in soccer. He's a B player in this or whatever. So regardless of what the guy is playing, they know in the long run they're going to lose to this guy because this guy's a sharp player. They will move more off of that than they will move off the money.
All right, let's chat about the ACC here, and we'll see if we get some thoughts. Have you taken any strong positions in games of the year lines or any of the look-ahead lines with any of these ACC teams?
I haven't. I happen to think that currently the season wins on Wake Forest is basically 5.5 minus 160. I think that's a little bit high. I just talked about how they were 6-2 against teams ranked outside of the top 50. They didn't have any success against the top teams, but they were 6-2 against the teams outside of the top 50, and they were only outgained them by like a tenth of a yard or each play, or 1 yard, you know, per play or whatever. So it wasn't a huge advantage there. And when you look at Wake Forest, they lost their defensive coordinator, went to Notre Dame. They're bringing in another defensive coordinator that's supposed to be highly regarded. But still, when you lose something like that, you have to be concerned. I don't like the Wake Forest offense at all. They've got both quarterbacks back. The second-string quarterback, or the guy that runs a little bit better, will be the starting quarterback this year. The public's been clamoring for that. But when I go down the list of their games, they have a lot of tough games. They've got games they can win, the obvious ones early in the season. But they've got some tough teams on their schedule. And, you know, I just happen to think this is a team right now that is going to have a hard time to get to 6 wins. And 6 wins is what's going to beat you. And they're going to have to pull off some upsets. And, you know, just take a look at some of the teams they've got on the schedule. It just shows that it's going to be a tough year for them. You know, they start off and playing some, you know, Jacksonville State, be a nice winner. I said Georgia Tech. Excuse me, I got the wrong sheet up here. But it's just, to me, Wake Forest is a team that has gotten a little bit more excitement because of what they did last year. I love the coach, and he's had a history of building on the program, but I think they were a year early last year, and I think there's going to be some drop back in that, and I think we're going to be able to go against them this season. They'll be Presbyterian, no doubt. Then they've got Utah State. They should probably get a two-thirds of a chance to win there. But most of the other games, I mean, they're playing Clemson, they're playing Florida State, Louisville, Notre Dame. The way it looks is they might have to pull off one of those games in order to get to 6. I don't see it happening. So right now, it's one of the things I'm looking at. Like I said, I don't play a lot of the season wins, but I think we're going to find some value on going against Wake Forest.
Yeah, I've even got Wake Forest about a 6-point dog when they go to Appalachian State. So, you know, I mean, it's tough when you're in a power conference and you're not even going to win all of your non-conference games. That makes it really, really challenging for you. There is one team I want to touch on here in the Atlantic Division, and then I want to focus on the Coastal because there are a lot of interchangeable teams there. But a team like North Carolina State, Dave Doran's done a pretty good job with this program, 3 straight winning seasons. They're a good team, but they're also in a conference, in a division with Florida State, Clemson, and Louisville, which makes it really, really hard for you to, you know, put together a good record. I mean, you're going to be an underdog in 3 division games at a minimum because you're going to be playing 3 really, really good teams. Do you have a hard time rating teams like that that are pretty good, but they're just in a stacked division?
Yeah, what you have to do is you break down the offense and defense. I think they could be competitive defensively, but they haven't shown anything about being able to score against other quality defenses. And you mentioned some of the teams that they're going to have to play. These are all very good to excellent defensive teams in this conference, which is why the ACC may be the best conference in college football. So, NC State right now is getting a lot of buzz. My early line said to bet on NC State. I wish I would have bet on them more. In fact, I don't think I have anything on NC State when it comes to games of the years. But they're turned into a hot team, and a lot of people are starting to back them now, which kind of fades me a little bit. I don't want to be with the masses when everybody says this is the team they want to beat, they want to back. I don't really want to be there. And, you know, I know I just talked about, you know, playing lines that you could have had and played lines that you had now. They were on the border early on, and now since some of the lines have moved, they're a thing right now where I'm probably not going to play on them. I'm going to wait and see how they do. But they do have the talent, especially defensively, and they could be a moneymaker, but right now they seem to be pretty popular. So I usually don't want to be on the popular sides.
All right, let's talk about this Coastal Division, because I think this thing is a really tough handicap. You've got Miami. Mark Richt did a pretty good job in his first year. They've got some quarterback questions. They've got some injury questions already as well. But Miami's a top 15 team in my power ratings right now because, again, one of those situations where you have to respect the talent, and it feels like Mark Richt is a guy, even though he probably didn't do it to his full ceiling at Georgia, a guy that can maximize talent. So Miami's right up there at the top for me in this division. And then Virginia Tech, you know, 10 wins last year with Justin Fuente, still a great defensive coordinator in Bud Foster. We'll see what they look like offensively. What's the gap between these two teams in your mind, Miami and Virginia Tech?
I kind of like Virginia Tech a little bit more, and earlier I liked Miami more, and just shows you how it changes as practices go on. Miami, keep in mind, Miami's at this point still doesn't know who the quarterback is. They haven't made that decision. It's up in the air, and Brad Kaya was there last year, a guy who got drafted into the NFL. So you're going from an NFL-caliber quarterback, which I believe there's four NFL quarterbacks in this conference that were great last year, and they aren't there anymore. But the defense, love the Miami defense. The offense, I have concerns because of the quarterback situation. Normally, I like to bet against teams that lose a quarterback to the NFL unless it's one of those organizations that continuously provide quarterbacks to the NFL. Clemson's one of them that's had some guys that have made the NFL over the years. That's the thing that bothers me about Miami is the quarterback situation. Love the defense. Mark Richt, great coach, although he didn't get a lot of credit at Georgia. He did a fantastic job there. But that is what concerns me, which puts Virginia Tech a little bit higher on my power ratings, maybe about a point or so. But, these seem to be the two best teams coming out of this conference or this division.
Well, then I guess the next question then is, how big of a drop-off is there for you to teams like Pitt? I think North Carolina is in for a down year because they lost a ton from last season. Georgia Tech had a bounce-back year. So, you know, how big of a drop-off do you see between Virginia Tech and Miami and then the other kind of contenders in this division?
Well, I'd rate Virginia Tech better, Miami slightly less. Right after that, I think Georgia Tech and North Carolina State are right there. Pitt, I think, is going to be better than a lot of people think. Obviously, they've lost a lot in the offseason, but I think Pitt's got a very good coaching staff, and they'll be able to do a little bit more. The North Carolina, out of the teams that you had mentioned, is the team I'm looking to bet against. You're number one, you've lost the quarterback to the NFL, and, in fact, he probably is going to be the only quarterback the rookie quarterback is going to start the season in the NFL unless there's an injury coming on. I think he's going to win the job there. But not only do you lose the quarterback, you're changing schemes a little bit. And North Carolina's defense wasn't very good anyway. And they're playing in a conference where most of the teams in this conference have excellent defenses. So I think North Carolina is a team. If it's a team I'm looking to fade out of this conference, that would probably be the team I'd want to do that on.
Let's talk about Georgia Tech for a second, because news came out about the Yellow Jackets the other day that Dedrick Mills out for the year, and that's a huge injury for them because obviously they run the ball a ton, but he's also the top returning running back from last year, had 12 touchdowns, over 5 yards per carry, led the team with 771 yards. They're down their quarterback. They're down their second leading rusher from last year. Now, you can make a case that this is a system offense. Somebody is going to run for yardage on this team. So, in that respect, did you make a power ratings adjustment to a running back injury for Georgia Tech?
I did not, because they have so many guys that do it. He was clearly the best running back they had. When you take a look at yards per carry and how efficient he was, it definitely makes a difference. But really, with Georgia Tech, they've got so many guys that they place into that position. And if you look at them year to year, you basically get the same output year to year. What did impress me last year is their ability to have bigger plays in the passing game. When you look back the last few years, last year was the breakout, and they started to get – in fact, Air Force is the same way. Air Force is another one of those teams that never pass the ball, but when they do, they're starting to have some success because everybody is up on the line looking for that run. And that's really what you need. And I think some of these teams need to do it more often. And it wouldn't surprise me if Georgia Tech did it more often this year, because it's a surprise thing. Everybody's doing the same thing every year. Everybody knows what they're going to do. You need to make adjustments. And some of these teams, are like the Georgia Tech, are starting to do that. They're throwing the ball. They're having more success doing it. So we'll have to see how the quarterbacks are this year. But I like the way Georgia Tech is playing. I think Georgia Tech may end up having a pretty good year.
A little bit of breaking news here on the show that Miami actually just named Malik Rozier their starting quarterback. So now that little bit of uncertainty has been settled. He was the favorite for the job, though. So does that make any kind of adjustment to your Miami number?
Not really. He was expected to be the quarterback. As you said, they've had some injuries in that regard. But at this point, I don't know if there's much of a difference between the quarterbacks they have. So probably not.
There's one other team that I want to touch on here in the ACC, and that's Virginia. We talk about teams that are expected to improve a little bit in their second year with a head coach. Bronco Mendenhall, his second year here for the Cavaliers in Charlottesville. 13 returning starters. This is obviously a team that needs a lot of work. They were bad offensively last year. They weren't very good defensively, and we know that Bronco Mendenhall is usually a guy that fashions a pretty good defense. But these are the kinds of situations that you want to look for. You want to look for these forgotten teams, a 2-10 team that was just 5-7 against the number, so nothing really stands out about them. Are you getting a little bit of helium for Virginia like I am?
I will say no, but I will say I will change my mind as the year goes on. The reason being, I love Bronco Mendenhall. I think he's a great coach. I think they come into this season, they don't have a lot of talent, but he can mold talent out of that group. So as the season goes on, I will be higher on Virginia than I am right now. The problem is right now they don't have any skill players. I need to come out and see how they do in that regard. Because this is a team that, you know, like you, as you mentioned, 2-10 last year. They're probably going to win 5 games this year, so they're going to be a mediocre team, better than last year. But I think as the season goes on, we're going to find some value on Virginia. I'm just going to sit back and wait early in the season.
One game I want to touch on for Saturday here to wrap up our segment with Brian Leonard. We already talked about South Florida and San Jose State, how you grabbed a good number there at 25, and that one's sitting still around 3 touchdowns. But I want to talk about this game because it's lighting up on the odds screen here this morning. Hawaii and UMass. Clearly not a game that's going to have a whole lot of public interest. In fact, a lot of people probably won't even know that that game is going on Saturday. But we saw an interesting move initially where UMass opened favored and then Hawaii wound up being the favorite. Now we're getting buyback here today. We've crossed back through 0 and now UMass is a 2-point favorite out there at Pinnacle, obviously one of the sharper shops. So if you're looking to adjust power ratings, grading against closing numbers, Pinnacle is probably the one that you want to use for that. But are you surprised to see this move here?
Not really. This is a game they had at the South Point. I believe they opened up Hawaii 3. And my number said pick 'em. And I was there with Brad, and I was there with Ralph Michaels, and we were discussing this game. And there was about 5 other handicappers that came in from out of town that I knew. We were all comparing our numbers. And, you know, I thought the number was high at 3, and I was going to play UMass. And we were talking about it, and some of the other guys had Hawaii a little bit higher. So it's back to towards my number from what it was, but it's been bouncing around, as you point out. William Hill still got a pick'em stations and still got Hawaii favored by 1 in this game. So there was a lot of talk about this being one of those games where you really don't know what you're going to get out of these teams. I believe this is UMass. If I'm correct, this is their last year in Division I. I think they're going to Division II.
I think so, yeah, because they don't have a conference affiliation. So I do think that they are looking to go the FCS route because, I mean, it makes more sense for them. And it's hard because being unaffiliated, you know, they have to play whoever is willing to play them. And that makes scheduling a challenge. Travel can sometimes be bad. I mean, they played their regular season finale last year in Hawaii. And athletic departments have a hard time paying for that. So I think that you're right.
Yeah, and when they were in the MAC, where they used to be, most of their games they would play at Gillette Stadium where the Patriots play. How big of a home field advantage are you getting when there's 10,000 people in the stadium that holds 80? I know they played some of their games at home. But there's really no home advantage when you're playing in a stadium of that size when you can't come close to filling it. And Hawaii travels. Hawaii is, you know, we come out to Las Vegas. They call this the seventh island. When Hawaii plays out here in Las Vegas, half the crowd is Hawaii fans. So, you know, I haven't really looked into this because, like I said, my number was pick'em, and the line's been around pick'em, so I didn't pay a lot of attention to it. But you're right, it's been a lot of movement on that, and there's been a lot of movement the last couple of days on Oregon State against Colorado State. Line's been bouncing around 3.5 or 4 there, but still a little bit early. But I would think most of the line moves this early in the week are from wise guys, not full wise guys, because they would have already had some money on this game from better lines earlier. But a lot of guys who bet for a living and don't like to tie up their money that far in advance, that's probably what you're getting on a Monday or Tuesday.
Good insights on today's show from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Brian, what's going on over at the site right now?
Actually, it should be pretty exciting this week. We've got some guys on the videos that normally are not in town, or they're not available for videos. They're going to be doing videos this week. So Cheetah, myself, and Ralph Michaels get the week off. So it'll be interesting to get some added perspectives out of Dwayne Bryant, who's in town. And then we've got two of the guys that I really respect, Chris Anook and Frank Perez, own a sports service site, and they're going to be discussing in there. And they're guys that have huge bankrolls, huge bettors. So you'll want to watch the videos for this week over at WagerTalk.com.
And you can follow Brian on Twitter at BLeonardSports. Brian Leonard, thank you so much for your time, man. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week, buddy.
Sounds great. Best of luck to everybody in this opening week.
Well, just go ahead and keep this college football train rolling here. We'll bring on Alex Nicholas from Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. Alex, good to chat with you again, buddy. How are you?
Yes, sir. You know it's football season when I'm talking with Adam Burke, man.
I know, right, buddy? How'd your summer go, man? Everything good?
Oh, it went good, man. Got a lot of traveling, lots of baseball. The Astros are in first place. I can't complain.
There you go. Sounds good. Has Texas high school football started yet?
Texas high school football will start next Friday. I actually broadcast high school football, and we have our first meeting for our local show. So September 1st will be 0 week, or what most people will call week one. So Texas high school football right around the corner.
That sounds good, man. I know you love that stuff too, and you get to do a lot of scouting of, you know, possible Conference USA recruits and you know, obviously the AAC and then the Big 12 and all those other schools. So that's pretty awesome, man. I hope you really enjoy this upcoming year of high school football. But we're going to talk Conference USA because high school football betting odds are sometimes available, but I don't know of any of them here so far. But all right, Conference USA. So Western Kentucky, the clear favorite, they're plus 165 to win Conference USA at 5 dimes. You can play the field against against Western Kentucky at minus 190. So they are clearly the big favorite. Should they be that clear of a favorite?
You know, I'm not too sure. I mean, you look at what kind of they lost and what they return, and Mike White is obviously going to be, you know, the poster boy of why they're going to be good. And defensively, they actually have some pretty good returners, particularly in the secondary with Joe Brown as a first-team all-selection. But, you know, honestly, I would – kind of steered towards a Middle Tennessee or even a Louisiana Tech. I mean, Middle Tennessee, defensively, they lost a lot of clout from what they have, but they returned one of the best quarterbacks and one of the best receiver combinations and Brent Stockstill and Richie James. And I just really think that that's going to be hard to stop. I mean, you look at what the numbers that they've put up over the past couple years, this is video game-like numbers. And then you look at Louisiana Tech out of the West, and I really like their new quarterback, Jamar Smith. I really like what Skip Holtz has been building, you know, recruiting-wise. And defensively, they have one of the top pass rushers probably in the whole entire group of five in Jalen Ferguson. And, you know, that kid is going to make a lot of money in the future playing NFL football. And I really think, in my opinion, looking at it as a whole, even though Louisiana Tech lost so many talented players, I really, really like this Louisiana Tech team to kind of be that sleeper. And then out of the East, I would think Middle Tennessee State, those would be where I would throw my money at. Because Western Kentucky, they just, as good as they've been and as consistent as they've been going through a coaching change, obviously, like I mentioned, you got Mike White. You know, I just don't know exactly if this team can be as strong as they can be consistently throughout the season compared to the Louisiana Tech team that lost a lot as well. But I just really like what they have coming back, a lot of proven guys, and what, like I mentioned, what Skip Holtz has been able to do recruiting. Those would kind of be my two teams that I would push ahead of Western Kentucky if I was making odds for Conference USA favorite.
Well, and especially from a value standpoint, Louisiana Tech plus 525, Middle Tennessee State plus 550. So you're getting some really good values there. Let's talk about Western Kentucky a little bit because they are the favorite and they are the team that everybody knows now because of what they've done over the last couple of years, 23-5 under Jeff Brohm. He goes over to Purdue. They bring in Mike Sanford Jr. Now, Mike Sanford, offensive coordinator at Notre Dame. Is he a good fit for this program and what they've got going on?
I think he has, you know, from a recruiting perspective, obviously, you know, we haven't watched any games, but seeing what they've been doing on the recruiting trail, I mean, this guy's really done a great job. I know they had a big week last week. They had a couple of three stars, and they really need to reload their skill position. You only return Nakarius Fant. That was a big time, you know, a big time part of what they were doing. Only had 400 yards this year, but he was a big part of it. You know, you take away Taiwan Taylor, Nicholas Norris, you know, you're rebuilding there. So I really like what he's done coming in and kind of just picking up kind of where Jeff Brohm left off. And that's, to me, that's recruiting. And that's what Western Kentucky has been able to do. They've been able to get those, you know, those kind of tweener power, you know, lower level power five. You know, they're going to start in the group of five as three stars, you know, even your low end two stars. And that's what I'm seeing so far to Mike Stafford. And now in terms of X's and O's, this Western Kentucky team has been known for their high powered offense. They could be known kind of defensively this year, you know, with the guys that returned Joel. I'm going to murder his last name, but Joel Ekwunbiwe, the linebacker, big-time starter, has 113 tackles last year, 21 for loss. You know, that's going to be a strength for them defensively. So while he's done stuff recruiting-wise that, you know, that Brohm was able to do, I think you're going to see this team continue to reload in the next couple of years, but it might be a different style where you see actually Western Kentucky's defense kind of be a strength while the offense is going to try to catch up as the season goes along.
I think what a lot of people don't realize about Western Kentucky, you look at those eye-popping numbers and everyone thinks that they must have played at a breakneck pace. They really didn't. They were just stunningly efficient, both in the passing game and in the running game. What do you think? I mean, I don't know if you've read up on it or if you've seen anything, and obviously we have a little bit of a barometer to go off of with what Notre Dame's done offensively. It seems like that Samford's going to keep the tempo the same. Do they get a little bit quicker? Do they get a little bit slower? What do you think?
You know, I think they keep it the same, especially with a guy like Mike White and the Curry's fan. That guy's a big-time playmaker. He's going to be thrust in. I mean, you look at what they did last year, and you're correct. They were just tremendously efficient. You had two guys that had over 75 catches. Mike White, you know, completing 67% of his passes. That's one of the most accurate quarterbacks you're going to find at the group of five level. And I think you're going to see that coming in. I mean, this is the guy that's kind of been around the Western Kentucky program going back to 2010 when Stafford was under Willie Taggart's first coaching staff. So I think they're going to definitely keep that in there. You know, you lose lots of talent in terms of the running back position to be able – I think that's one thing that a lot of people didn't realize of how efficient the running game was with Anthony Wales. You know, and he was hurt most of his career, but that's a productive guy as well, you know, that was able to, you know, throw out 1,600 yards last year, 27 touchdowns. I mean, that's kind of the key. Can they get that running game to just kind of keep that flow offensively and keep defenses off balance? Because you know Mike White's going to complete his passes. You know Mike White's going to throw for over 400 passing attempts this season. So I really think you still see that style of offense. It's just, like I said, replacing those receivers and having those big-time playmakers. That's going to be their key to continue that offensive resurgence that they've had over the past couple of years.
So you mentioned Middle Tennessee State is a team that you really like, and they're actually a team that I've taken a pretty strong position on coming into the season. On a neutral field, I'd have them a 3-point dog to Western Kentucky. They are the second-best team in my Conference USA power ratings to me. You know, there's a lot to like about this team. You mentioned Brent Stockstill coming back. Obviously, he helps. Richie James, he's going to make some money going over to the NFL here, if not after this year, certainly after next year, if he decides to play his senior season. But they bring in Scott Schaefer as a defensive coordinator, and the defense for this team last year was not good. Now, you also have to keep in mind, once Stockstill got hurt, they got crushed from a turnover margin standpoint. They gave up a ton of points, a ton of yards. That shouldn't be the case as long as Stockstill's healthy here this year. Is that where we maybe see the biggest change for Middle Tennessee, is on the defensive side of the ball?
I mean, I think in terms of scheme and you know, basically what they're going to do in game plan, yes. But I'm kind of with you. I don't know what this defense is going to be. I see Middle Tennessee State as a team that's going to have to win a lot of shootouts. You know, one of their best defensive players, their cover corner Mike Minter, you know, who's just an experienced guy. You know, he's not a guy that, you know, is going to go out there and really make, you know, flip that turnover margin. You know, but he's a guy that's really, really just been around, and that's really the only guy that I could really hang my hat on defensively and say that's kind of something that you can, you know, something that they can build on. So I think defense is a huge question. Now, obviously, they made the change, and, you know, sometimes that change could either be good or it can bite you. And I think early on it could bite them. you know, just in terms of figuring it out, and you play Vanderbilt, you're at Syracuse, you're at Minnesota, and then you host Bowling Green. You know, that's a tough slate for them. And I think defensively, you'll see them be behind the eight ball in a big way. But I think they're really good offensively, where this team can probably squeeze out, you know, as long, like you mentioned, as long as Stockfield can take care of the football and stay healthy, this is a team that can really put up some points and be in those type of shootouts and be a really fun team to watch. And, you know, that's kind of living on the edge. That kind of takes me back to, you know, 12 years ago when Mike Price came in and, you know, UTEP was putting up all these points. We couldn't stop a nosebleed. I think this team really, really is going to be similar to what those type of old Conference USA teams were, high-powered offense, defense, you know, just kind of pray for a stop at the end of the game and be able to win the game. So I think that's obviously, you know, it was a big area of need that's Coach Stock still addressed. So that's going to be real interesting. But I think those first four games, I'm not sure if you see that defense really, really settle into about the middle of their conference schedule, because those first four games that they have, that defense is really going to be put to the test. And like I mentioned, we could see some pretty outrageous scores, final scores, and some pretty interesting over, you know, you just want to get on that over with Middle Tennessee is basically what I'm trying to say right now. You know, that's going to be a team that you're going to really look at.
Well, speaking of overs, Louisiana Tech last year, their games averaged almost, 78 points per game here last season. They scored 44, gave up 33.6. Now, they do have a quarterback change. Ryan Higgins moves on. He had a 41-8 touchdown interception ratio. So, you know, we'll see what happens with this Louisiana Tech offense. They're the third-rated team in my power ratings for Conference USA. Is this a team that can get stops if they need them, if this offense gets off to a slow start?
That's going to be the biggest question for me. It's not about their front seven, it's their secondary. I mean, they've lost a lot of talent. Xavier Woods was the guy that's probably going to start for the Dallas Cowboys this year, was a, you know, defensive pillar there for 4 years. But I think really when you look at their defensive line with Jalen Ferguson, Jordan Bradford, and Deldrick Kenny, you know, you look at those guys, the production that they've brought to Conference USA, and that's a pretty formidable foe in the front seven. I'm just really, really concerned about their secondary. You know, most of their interceptions, you know, are gone. They graduated. Most of their turnovers that they created. So I think pass rush wise, this is definitely going to be one of the better pass rushing teams because of Jalen Ferguson, and even throwing Canty, a guy that could probably sneak in to some people's NFL's radars if he has a big year. Obviously, Ferguson's going to draw a lot of attention, so Canty's going to be a guy that's probably going to be, you know, called on a lot. But I really feel like defensively, their question mark is going to be in the secondary. And but like I mentioned earlier when I was talking about Louisiana Tech, they've recruited well. You know, they're Louisiana Tech's a team that they really do not get anything less than 3 stars, particularly athletic at the skill positions, even on offense and defensive side, particularly in that secondary. So I think they're going to have a lot. They're going to be really young, really green in that secondary. But I really like Jalen Ferguson. I really like Deldrick Kenny. I think mixed with those guys to help out the secondary, that's going to kind of be key for Louisiana Tech to find out early. And, you know, they have a tough slate as well. Mississippi State at home and then at Western Kentucky. So that secondary is going to be tested. And then they go on the road to South Carolina. So we're going to find out a lot about that secondary and how quick they can gel with a really, really good front three.
Jalen Ferguson, 14.5 sacks last year, so definitely a name to remember. They lost 218 receptions from Trent Taylor and Carlos Henderson and 31 receiving touchdowns. So, you know, you look at Skip Holtz, he's an offensive-minded guy. He wasn't great against the spread or anything like that at some of his previous jobs. He's been pretty good here overall at Louisiana Tech, and in fact, they're 26-15 against the spread over the last 3 years. So he's gotten much better in that regard. What do you think the perception is of this team? Because they lost a lot, and they lost a lot at very notable positions. So you think maybe there is a little bit of value in them going into the year?
No doubt about it. You know, a name to watch out for, Marlon Watts. He's going to be a senior. You know, obviously, you know, filling that type of production with Carlos Henderson and Trent Taylor, both guys are going to play long NFL careers, like you mentioned. But, you know, I think Marlon Watts is going to be a guy that can help out Jamar Smith. You also got junior Cam McKnight, who was kind of like a Swiss Army knife for them the past couple of years. Played running back, played receiver, definitely going to play, you know, wide receiver this year. And then you got Tulane transfer Teddy Bill, who's all these guys are throwing in, you know, all throwing into the mix. And then you have Oklahoma commit Adrian Hardy that's also going to be in there. So you have a bunch of new guys that are going to be green, but the thing about it, there's no film on them. You know, these are guys that are really going to be, you know, thrown into the fire. And also another guy you got to mention, Alfred Smith. You know, he made 11 appearances last year and has that experience along with Watts and McKnight. So, you know, there is definitely some value with some guys that have kind of been around around their program, haven't put up obviously the numbers that Trent Taylor and Carlos Henderson could be. But like I mentioned with Louisiana Tech, I feel like what Skip Holtz has built there, they're kind of a plug-and-play type of team. You know, you can lose a guy, plug in a guy, you know, like Alfred Smith, plug in a guy like Marlon Watts, plug in a guy like Cameron Knight, not only at running back, but put him out in the slot. And then you also have Jared Kraft, who's been around their program the past couple of years and ran for 1,000 yards and 9 touchdowns last year. He's a big-time home run hitter as well. And then you also have Boston Scott, a guy that's going to be right there with them for carry. So I think there's a lot of value on this team, and it kind of just goes back, kind of like a broken record, but Skip Holtz has recruited very, very well at Louisiana Tech, where they're at that point where now they can plug and play and put different athletes in different situations, particularly, like I mentioned, the guy that I really like, Cam McKnight. And I think this team has a lot of value. And like I said, out of the West, if I had to put money on a West favorite, it would definitely be Louisiana Tech 10 times.
All right. I think the most interesting team in Conference USA this year, and no offense meant to any of the other programs, is UTSA. What Frank Wilson did with this team last year, taking over the job so late in the process, didn't get to do anything in terms of recruiting, and to get this team to a bowl game was arguably the best coaching job in college football last year. And they played pretty well in the New Mexico Bowl. They were on the road, basically, against New Mexico. 9.5-point dog, lost by 3, did a good job defending that, you know, interesting triple-option-type format that Bob Davies got down there. How far of a gap is there in your mind between Louisiana Tech and UTSA there in the West Division?
You know, a lot of people are going to tell you different things. A lot of people are high on UTSA. I'm kind of tapering my expectations on them. I still think there's a huge gap because of how well Louisiana Tech has recruited over the past couple of years, like I mentioned before many times. But UTSA is not that far behind what they've done in recruiting. But in terms of this season, I think there's still that big gap in terms of experience. And to me, I always question UTSA's offensive line. Now, they do return 3 or 4 starters on that offensive line, 4 guys that have really played a lot for them. And that's really my question. And also, too, at running back, yeah, you know, you look at Jalen Rhodes, who was part of a really good tandem last year with Jarvion Williams. You know, can the running back depth hold up? They're a physical type of offensive team. They're a run first team, even though Dalton Sturm can put up some really good numbers. That's really my question. Is their offensive line depth? Is their offensive line up to par? I mean, this is still a team that had a game last year where they had negative yards rushing, you know, and obviously that's last year. But you look at what they return offensively, you know, most of those guys are coming back, minus Jarvion Williams. So can Jalen Rhodes carry that torch? And can Dalton Sturm kind of take his play to the next level and close that gap? And I think that's really the key for UTSA. If they're going to close this gap, Dalton Sturm has to play at a very high all-conference type level. He has that heart to do it, but as a walk-on, has he developed enough to do that? And they have some great receivers. Josh Stewart is one of the bigger targets in Conference USA. He's really came on. Kerry Thomas is a very, very hands type of guy that's always going to make plays for them. You know, but then defensively, I mean, they're really, really solid, particularly in their front seven. Marcus Davenport, future NFL guy. Kevin Strong could be a future NFL guy. Josiah Tafaya, their linebacker, the All-American linebacker, is an NFL guy. Nate Gaines at safety is another one of those guys. So they have the talent there. But like I said, my question is offensive line, and can Dalton Sturm take his play up to all conference level? That will be, to me, that's kind of the questions that I have for them to close that gap on Louisiana Tech. And like I mentioned, I don't feel they're not far behind, but just particularly this year, I think Louisiana Tech has a head and shoulders advantage in the West, in my opinion.
All right, let's hop back over to the East then, because if UTSA is the most interesting team, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe Florida Atlantic is the most interesting team because, you know, there's certainly a lot going on there with them. But let's talk Marshall for a second. So Marshall, 10-4 in 2013, 13-1 in 2014, 10-3 in 2015, 3-9 last year. What's going on in Huntington? I mean, was that just a one-year blip? Do you feel like they can kind of return to a little bit of prominence, or is this a sign of, you know, maybe what's to come? As arguably the rest of the division's gotten, or the rest of the conference has gotten a lot stronger.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think they took a hit. You know, they took a hit. They had a lot of defections. I remember coming on and talking about that last year. They went through some off-field stuff that happened, and they lacked the offensive playmakers that they've had over the past couple of years. And now, you know, they have a couple of transfers that come in. Doc Holliday always recruits well, particularly the state of Florida. come in about that Florida to hunting West Virginia connection. You never would have thought that would happen. But Doc Holliday is able to go down to Florida and get some talent, and he's done that. He has two transfers from Miami, I believe, that came in this year. You know, you return your quarterback, Chase Litton, who's been kind of consistent, even though, like I mentioned, he hasn't had those type of weapons that he's used to in the past. But I really, really think that this is a year where you're going to see Marshall get right, you know, in a sense. We've seen Marshall, you know, going back to the Rakeem Cato days of running through the East and being that team that you know is going to be at the top, going to be up contending at the end of the year. And I think really they're going to be a team that's going to be back this year in terms of just, you know, being more competitive, being more explosive offensively and kind of getting things together. You know, I look at last year's kind of as an anomaly for them because they went through so much off-field drama, so many defections. And, you know, like I mentioned, offensively, they just weren't explosive as we're used to a Marshall team being. So I think with the way that they've recruited some of the transfers that they picked up to help that offense, I really, really think you're looking at Marshall as a team that's going to really, really step up. You look at some of the transfers they got, Brady Tyree, Oklahoma State transfer, Obi Obwilo. Those guys are really, really going to help out Chase Lane, mixed along with Hylik Foster and Ryan Yerlich. That should give Chase so many options to choose from compared to where they were last year. You know, and I think just so much experience and talent that they've had over the past couple of years is going to come together. But can they pull it together as a team chemistry standpoint to do that for 12 games or to be able to win, you know, 5 to 6 conference games? That's kind of my big question. But the talent is there. The pieces are there. And I think now it's really Doc Holliday's on that hot seat. And we're going to really see as much talent as he had. Can he develop a team chemistry to get this team rolling, you know, with a pretty tough, a fairly tough schedule to start off here in the non-conference for Marshall?
So when I updated my power ratings from when I first did them in July to when I updated them here over the weekend, Florida Atlantic was one of the biggest movers for me. I bumped them up 3 points here. They're fifth in Conference USA in my power ratings at this point. Also, there's a chance I could make a little bit more of an adjustment if Khalib Woods is able to come back. And it looks like that will probably be the case. So the hype train is really starting to go here for the Owls. You got Lane Kiffin. You got Kendall Briles. You've got the state of Florida. You know, there's pretty decent facilities here at Florida Atlantic. So everything trending up for the Owls. The question is, can they meet some of those rising expectations here in Kiffin's first year?
You know, I did a Q&A with our sister site Underdog Dynasty yesterday, and I'm really, really high on Florida Atlantic. I think Lane, you know, he's got a lot of different pieces. He's got a lot of transfers, and you know, as everybody knows, that can either go, you know, to the right side or that can go to the left side for you. But I really think I said this when they hired Lane Kiffin. If Lane Kiffin coached that FAU team last year, they go 6-6. I mean, they really played with a patched-up offensive line. I mean, I think in the first 4 weeks, they lost every offensive line projected starter within the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. And they really played just kind of a patchwork. And you still had a talented guy like Devin Singleton go off for 1,000 yards and 12 touchdowns. And then also Greg Howell ran for 13 touchdowns as well. Those two guys are back, mixed with the DeAndre McNeil, the wide receiver that chose FAU over UCLA. And then DeAndre Johnson, the quarterback, you know, he's battling Jason Driscoll. And I think there's just a lot of talent there. Mix that in with what should be a very wide open run-based offense with Buddy Howell and with Devin Singletary, something that Kendall Briles has kind of done well with, and so has Lane Kiffin. I really think this team is intriguing and is a true sleeper. And I agree with you. I would put them up there in that top five, top six, talent-wise, even before we see a game. You know, Devin Singletary is the guy that, you know, the first freshman in the 16-year history of FAU football to get the 1,000-yard plateau. And I think that's a guy that's going to be a household name in Conference USA. And you throw in all the Power 5 transfers they have, particularly on the defensive side. You look at Kane Daub, a former four-star recruit player, Florida State guy that's really going to help out. You know, Ernest Bagner, another guy. They also have depth, you know, with the kid slips my name, but the kid that went from Louisville, Tim Bonner, that was on the Last Chance U. I mean, this is Last Chance U here at FAU. But there's just so many pieces that I really, really like. And you bring in that Lane Kiffin charisma. You bring in what he's kind of built in terms of hype and confidence in that program. And I really think it would not be surprising me to see Lane Kiffin take this team to 7-5, you know, 8-4 in their first year and possibly upset some people, you know, in the Conference USA ranks. So looking at that Marshall-Western Kentucky swing, that's going to be kind of a game where I'm really – a little swing there that I'm really, really going to look at, because you look at overall at their schedule, this is a team that can really, really surprise some folks this season, and I'm really excited to see what Lane Kiffin can bring to Conference USA.
All right. I don't know if you've been dreading this segment or not, but let's talk UTEP Miners. You know, when you look at this team, I mean, they're one of the lowest power rated teams in the country for me. They're in the bottom, I think they're in the bottom five, bottom 10, something like that, out of the 130 teams in FBS. I actually have them 127th. It's going to be a tough year for them. I mean, you lose a guy like Aaron Jones, 1,773 yards, 17 touchdowns. It's a very, very big loss for them. Are things as bad as they seem in El Paso, or is this a team that, you know, maybe a little bit better than people think?
You know, it's kind of like I've been telling people the past couple of months and you know, trying to get a read on this team. And I got a little bit of a better read, more positive read from last Sunday's scrimmage. But this team is probably the team with – out of 130 FPS teams, this team is the biggest enigma out of anybody. I mean, there's so many question marks, particularly on the offensive side. Defensively, you know, they've improved their defensive line play. You know, they picked up one of the top recruits that Sean Cougar signed, Keith Sullivan, chose UTEP over Texas Tech and Houston. And, you know, he's a three-star guy that's really, really came along and really helped their defensive line, which I think is going to be improved. And that's kind of what they lacked last year with defensive line play, havoc, being able to create turnovers. And I think you'll be able to get that. But offensively, you return Ryan Metz, you return Will Hernandez, you know, you return pretty much almost everybody on the offensive line. You only really lost one starter, one key contributor. But the big question is the passing game. Is UTEP going to open up their passing game? Or my biggest question, can UTEP tailor their passing game to what their strengths are? They have a bunch of possession receivers, not very many explosive wideouts, guys that are going to stretch the field. They did sign a JUCO guy and Allen Boosie, who's looked really good. But, you know, you just never know. And I think these first six games of the season are really going to be telling. It's a tough schedule for UTEP. At Oklahoma, you're home against Rice, home against Arizona, at New Mexico State, and at Army. And then you open up on the road at conference play in Southern Miss. We're going to find a lot about this UTEP team because, honestly, man, I have no clue of how good this team can be. I feel this team could be as bad as 0-12. Their ceiling for me, I guess if you would say, could be a 6-7 win team if everything kind of goes, you know, the perfect way that you would want it, at least early on in the season. But this team just has so many question marks. You're ushering in basically four or five new running backs, two that have actual experience. But there's just so many question marks on the offensive side. You have to replace the all-conference tight end and Hayden Plink, you know, and obviously, like you mentioned, Aaron Jones. So just so many question marks with the Miners. It's hard to get a read on this team. But the thing is that the only thing that I could be for sure is defensively, the depth is there. You know, they picked up Julian Jackson, a grad transfer from Western Kentucky, as a pass rushing specialist out of outside linebacker in the 3-4 defense. But there's just too many questions for me to be really sure about how good or how bad this UTEP team is. But like I mentioned, it could be an 0-12 team. It could be a 6-6 team. It could be a 3-9 team. It's really, really, really going to have to see what Sean Cougar, what Brent Peace, and what Tom Mason have kind of come together now in the second year together in their system. So this UTEP team, to me, as a person that covers them every day of my life, I have no clue what this UTEP team could be, and that's kind of odd for somebody that covers them every day like me.
Well, to be fair, I mean, I know I painted kind of a negative picture there talking about where they are in my power ratings, but if Josh Fields can play like Aaron Jones as a freshman, you know, hey, maybe things could go a little bit more in their favor this season. One more team I want to touch on here, and then I want to get your thoughts on the Rice and Stanford line real quickly. UAB. Really, this year for me, it doesn't matter what their record is. It's just good to see them back playing football. It's good to see them with a program again. And kudos to Bill Clark for hanging around and, you know, just sort of waiting this thing out and then doing as much as he possibly could to recruit for this program during the 2 years that they were down. Is it going to be ugly for the Blazers every week, or is this a team that, you know, does have some talent?
You know, you want to talk about somebody with heart and all the good, all the things that come with good. I mean, that's Bill Clark. What a man that man is. I mean, like you said, to be able to stick around, to kind of, you know, really just kind of get, you know, dicked around, I guess you could say, you know, for a whole season or, you know, or whatever that situation was, you know, the month in December after, you know, they canceled the football program. But, you know, it's really hard to get a read on UAB. Well, I know they have a really good linebacker in Shaq Jones, and that's pretty much all I know about UAB for now. You know, UTEP plays them the last, you know, end of the year. And I think this team will definitely struggle to figure it out. But, I mean, you look at what Bill Clark was building before, you know, the shutdown of the program. I mean, this was a 6-6 team. This is a team that was bowl eligible with, you know, obviously – they were void in talent in some areas back then, But you look at now, I mean, the cup board was pretty much dry, but he's done a great job of keeping guys, retaining guys, and getting them ready for this season. And that's going to be real interesting to see how he can keep that together. Is their depth up to par at certain positions? You know, will their depth get exposed at certain positions? That's kind of my question, is how long can this – if they do get off to a good start, you know, with the excitement of being back, do they have enough depth to carry them to you know, have a 4-win season, a 5-win season? That's going to be telling. But no doubt that Bill Clark is probably the perfect guy to be able to get this thing back rolling. Like I mentioned, the year before they left, this is a team that had maybe one or two talented guys, but this was a 6-6 team. So I don't expect that early on, but I think before long, with UAB's improvements to their facilities, to the things that they're doing off the field, you know, they've raised $43 million, you know, since they've been back. And that comes back from the city of Birmingham too. I think they're going to be on the up and up, but this year I think you'll see some big time growing pains from a team trying to put piece back together an FBS roster.
All right, one last thing to talk about here, that is Rice. They play in Sydney, Australia on Saturday night against Stanford. Rice is catching 31 points in this game. So, you know, when you consider as well that the total on this game is 50.5, clearly the odds makers are not expecting a whole lot from the Rice offense in this game. Rice probably does get blown out. They may cover the number. But, you know, what do you think we'll see from the Owls here? Do you think we'll see a better team than last year's product?
You know, I think you'll see a very slow-paced offense. You know, they just named Sam Glaisman a true freshman, their quarterback, redshirt freshman, excuse me. He's a quarterback out of Waco, and he beat out, you know, Jackson Tyner, a guy that's been around, and JT Granado. And I think really what you're going to see from Rice, you're going to see a very – there's a reason why that over-under is at 50. You know, both teams are going to value possessions. Rice is going to try to kill the clock. They're going to try to win time of possession. And I think that's probably going to be David Bayless' game plan, try to control the ground game, not put too much on Glaisman's plate early on, have him, quote-unquote, manage the game, move the chains on third down. And I really think you'll see Rice try to slow this game down and try to go toe-to-toe with Stanford. Will it work? Obviously, we know the answer to that one. Stanford's, you know, built on that physical style of football. So that's going to be really interesting to see. That game could be a really low-scoring game. You know, it wouldn't really surprise me to see Stanford maybe even pitch a shutout or a hold Rice's offense, which kind of struggled last year at times, and now you're bringing in a brand-new quarterback, you know, with some new pieces offensively. I really think Rice is going to have a tough time putting up points in that game, and I think that's why you see the odds makers have it at 50. And I think you'll just see Stanford being able to control both lines of scrimmage and to be able to get what they have, get what they want in the running game. Now, Rice's defense, you have, you know, one of the top defenders in Conference USA and Ellerbe for Rice, and you have a couple of pieces from the secondary that they've played, you know, two years in a row now, if I'm not mistaken, you know, that young Rice secondary that, you know, I was talking about a couple years ago, they're growing up. So defensively, I think Rice is going to be able to make some type of stand, you know, maybe not consistently in that game, but I think offensively, you're going to see a really vanilla game plan from David Bayless, just trying to control the clock, trying to run out that clock. And it's hard for me to see a team like Rice really, really putting up, you know, even more than 20 points in that game. And I think Stanford should have an easy time controlling that line of scrimmage.
Good thoughts on today's show from Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush, the SB Nation home of the UTEP Miners. I presume you guys are previewing the college football season over there right now.
Of course, man. Yeah, we knocked out our first podcast of the season last night. We're looking at every position group now through the UTEP football team. Have some notes from last Sunday's scrimmage, and then also a little bit of UTEP basketball. They took a foreign tour to Costa Rica, so we got an early look at some college basketball things that you guys could check out there. So yeah, a lot of previews. We're gonna keep pumping them out throughout the week and getting ready for the season opener September 2nd.
How about the Twitter handles?
We're at SBN Minor Rush on Twitter, and you can find me at NicholasAlex915 and also on Facebook.com/MinorRush.
So Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush, great to talk to you again, buddy. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Adam. Have a good one, man.
Great stuff there on today's show from Alex Nicholas of Minor Rush and also from Brian Leonard of WagerTalk.com. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll hear from Sports Cheetah, our Hunting for Winners segment with him. Plenty of stuff to talk about here, obviously, with him as we get closer to the college football season. I'm not sure if we'll have Wes Reynolds on tomorrow or if we'll catch him again on Friday. Since our two regular Friday segments, our Super Contest segment and our segment with Brent, the odds maker from DSI Sportsbook, won't start until next month. But then on Thursday, you'll hear from Brad Powers from BradPowersSports.com. Also, Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. So I'll do it for today. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.